Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast with myself, Hayden Gullis, and the incredible Amber Jones. We're going to be talking everything Canadian Grand Prix today. And Amber, what an incredible race that was over the weekend. I actually really, really enjoyed that one. There was lots going on up and down the field. There was strategy involved. There was a fight for the win. Great race.
I agree completely. It was a great race, Hayden. However, I was very optimistic for the Haases at the start of the race. I was like, oh my God, maybe they're onto something. They went out on those wet tyres and I thought, is that a risk or is this going to be reward? I was rooting for Haas, but didn't last very long. But there were so many different storylines going on in that race. It's definitely one to remember. And I think it's given us a sense of optimism for the season ahead.
Yeah, Kevin Magnussen is kind of following that trend of this season. He's not there to score points. He's there to provide us with an entertainment factor. And he definitely did that in the first half of the race. There was so many good overtakes. He got up to fourth, I think it was, before the Inter started to work a little bit better. If only the weather, you know, threw in a surprise or the radar didn't quite catch how long the rain was going to last and all that. So, but a good strategy call from the start for Haas. But unfortunately, of course, unless you get like 20 seconds clear, then it's not really going to work out. You've then got a box to Inters, and then it was just drying anyway. I was a little bit disappointed that no one went for slicks. I was like kind of maybe hoping that Hülkenberg, when he made his later pit stop from wets to Inters, I was hoping maybe just take that gamble. I know that the rain is coming, and it is, and we saw with Charles Leclerc when he went to dries, it was raining, it really didn't work out. But again, just take the gamble. You've already gambled once. Gamble again, get back up through the field, and then deal with it later. Okay, that's future Hülkenberg's problem. Stop thinking about him. Think about him later.
I was kind of hoping this race answered a lot of our prayers of, you know, changing up tyre strategies. We don't want everyone to be on the same strategy. So that's the one thing I think that made this race super interesting is what's going to happen. When I saw Charles going on some drier tyres, I thought, no, please don't do it. It's going to be a slip and slide. What a mistake. There isn't enough heat. He was going so slow as well, which is just the worst thing you can do.
Especially hard.
Why?
Hard,
well, obviously I understood.
Well,
I was like, right, they're going to try and get to the end of the race. Cool, that's it now. But why? When you're going that slow, there's no grip, yeah, there's no traction. Your car is just going to slip and slide even worse. I thought, what are they doing? But then it was a fail in the end anyway, because it was a double DNF for the Ferraris, which was gutting. I think as well with Charles, he's that driver that has the best look and the worst look ever. He has to have the yin and yang. So, you know, Monaco, he got his first win. Everyone was super excited. Unfortunately, going to Canada, he wasn't going to keep that that train going anymore. He had to have a bad race, which is so unlucky, and I was gutted for him. But at least, you know, his teammate didn't have a great race either, so it wasn't just him. But really unfortunate for the Ferraris.
No, big struggle over in the team, the red team. Yeah, bad call. They had the engine issues as well. Was able to reset the engine, I think, under the safety car when they made that pit stop back to the Inters and then went dries. And it just, yeah, it was never going to work. Like, maybe if you go softs in those conditions, you might stand a chance because they're easier to get temperature into the tyres. But even then, I think it was too much of a struggle. And unless there was a safety car, if there was a safety car in that moment and you're behind it, then it's like, okay, cool, this is fine. They're all going to be driving slowly. The track's going to come to us. It will be a little bit slower at the restart, but the track will come to us and we'll get back in this. But yeah, just was not meant to be. Another team it wasn't meant to be for, Williams. Two future teammates maybe coming together.
Yeah.
Albon and Sainz. Sainz making that mistake, and then Albon just tried to get out of the way, but Sainz's car was always coming over to that side, and unfortunately the collision took them out. But I feel like Albon was running really well before that moment.
Yeah, but also I was thinking like instantly about Sargeant, because I thought he was going to have quite a good weekend. Then unfortunately, like we see again, slip and slides, he's all over the place, he's lost control of the car, he's having these little bumps and whatever, which I thought was really sad because he now got given all the upgrades on that car. But I just don't know if it's his inexperience, his bad habits. I don't know what it is about Sargeant, but he always has to make a mistake. And I'm like, is this like a Mazepin or something where there was always something going wrong? You know, he could not keep control of that Haas when he was in it. Is this just the same thing we're seeing with Sargeant? So it's really unfortunate, and obviously unfortunate for both of the Williams, but I was really rooting for him this race, and it just didn't turn out his way at all.
Yeah, he made that first mistake, just dipping a wheel onto the wet stuff and then going straight on, but kept it out of the barrier, so that was good. And then, of course, the mistake that took off his rear wing. Very interesting moment that happened then as well, which was, of course, the safety car, but we'll get onto that in a bit. In terms of Williams, I think they've made it very clear that Sargeant isn't staying anymore. I saw an interview with James Vowles talking about Sainz, and it was very much about, yeah, we'd love to have Sainz in our team. And, the fact that we're pursuing Sainz shows that we're not the Williams that we were 3 years ago. Yeah. We are pushing forward. We're going to have the best engine in 2026, and we want to try and get up to the front. So we're going to have the best drivers to do that. And he's basically just said that the ball is in Sainz's court. Like, it's up to him. If Sainz wants to go to Williams, the offer's there. And it will be Albon and Sainz for next season. There are rumours that it is going to be announced. It's done, and it will be announced ahead of the Spanish GP, which is the next one coming up. So maybe expect that before the next podcast or between the next podcast and the Spanish GP. Maybe that will be announced there. But interesting for Williams there. I think a lot of things actually happened outside the racing. Tsunoda also got announced a new contract with RB. So not moving to this team, Aston Martin, like I thought might happen with them taking on the Honda power units. But another person who did get a contract offer, that is a big controversial moment, Sergio Perez. Sergio Perez got a contract offer, of course. And I think we spoke about it briefly on the last podcast. But now this is another race in a row where he's out in Q1. He's out-qualified by Sargeant, and he crashes as well. Like, I don't want to hate on Perez, and could someone do a better job? Maybe, maybe not. But there's you never know. Without, like, Yuki, okay, yes, he's a rough diamond. He makes mistakes. He made mistakes in Canada as well. But at least with Yuki, he's younger, and you can give an excuse for making those mistakes. With Sergio Perez making those mistakes and being off the pace, you've got to question that. I think you have to question it.
I think what it is about Perez, though, and I don't want to take away any of his talent, because we can see that, he is a great driver, just we're not really seeing that this season and even like last season and stuff like that. But he brings in a lot of money for that team. So I don't know if it's completely true. There's rumours floating around that, the sponsors that he brings pays everyone's salaries at the end of the day. And that's obviously something that the teams are going to need. So if he is sometimes a great driver, but not always, I think they just make that sacrifice of he brings in a lot of money for us. So, we're happy with our number one driver as Max. Let's just keep it like that. Perez, do what you want, really. We want you to get in the points. We want you to obviously get second, get on that podium. But we're all right with Max. And I think that's where Red Bull are at the minute. And that's why there's lots of confusion as to why would you keep Perez? What is he bringing? There's way better drivers potentially that could fill that second seat and do it more effectively. But that's what I think it is. That's my opinion, is he just brings in a lot of money. And we know this sport, it relies heavily on lots of money. So I think that's the reason why they keep him. But it was a shock for a two-year contract.
It's Red Bull, though. Like, Red Bull, do they really need the money? Like, I'd understand it if you're talking about Haas, you're talking about Williams, you're talking about Stake, you're talking about those sort of teams at the lower end of the field. But Red Bull, leading the way, have a huge title sponsor in Red Bull. I don't think they need the money. I don't think they need it. And, okay, if they win the Constructors, there's still no arguing about it. I think it's fine until they lose the Constructors. As soon as they start losing the Constructors, then there's a worry. And yes, okay, they were helped out massively this weekend with, of course, Ferrari having a big blunder, scoring no points, and now they've got a 50-point lead over them. Okay, brilliant. But all it takes is a couple of good weekends for both Ferrari drivers, and you know, you're back in the mix. However, one thing that you do look at in the standings is you win the race, you get 25 points. Second and third together, a total amount equates to 33 points, meaning that, you know, if Sergio Perez just gets 12 points, he's equaled? No? Less? No. I'm trying to do maths now. A little bit less.
Okay.
All he needs, I think it's sixth. I think all he needs is sixth, yeah, is the right position. Yeah, sixth. So as long as he gets around that sixth position, if Ferrari is second and third, then for Red Bull, I suppose they're fine. But it does just kind of ask that question, I suppose, that you look at the team and you think, even Daniel Ricciardo, he's inconsistent. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. He had a good weekend this weekend, but he needs more of them to show that, because Yuki Tsunoda has been performing the majority of the season so far, made a big mistake this weekend, and Ricciardo got the upper hand. But, you know, you could look at Ricciardo and just be like, do you know what, just throw him in there. What's the difference? If he's underperforming, Sergio Perez is underperforming.
I know. I just think it's such a big risk, though, because obviously Ricciardo's had so much stick this weekend, which we'll get onto in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I think that's just too much of a risk. At least Perez has shown some more of a promise, I think, as opposed to Ricciardo. But also, I think
the last three races he's been out of Q1.
I know, but I think they're sort of looking there as a whole. Well, it makes sense. I see your point, because if there's other drivers that right now are more, they're outperforming Perez, you would think, why are they not opening those doors for those drivers? But I also think it's a question of, you know, are Red Bull seeing the future that we're not seeing? Mm. And they know they might struggle. You know, when the 2026 rules and regulations come in, they might struggle. I think it's showing their weaknesses now, because if they knew they were going to be super strong, then they could bring in another driver. And that's why I always go back to the sponsorship side of things, because they don't know where they're going to be. So they need to say, sustainable and consistent, let's keep that money from Perez coming in, because we don't know where we're going to end up this season, next season, and 2026 especially.
Okay, there we go. Let us know in any comment section what you think about Sergio Perez. Do you think he has done enough to earn that seat still? Or is there someone else better in the wings? Let's move back to the race then and talk about the front, the fight that went on. Great battles. George Russell led from pole position. First time, I think, since Jerez that we've seen the two of the fronts at exactly the same time. In Jerez, though, it was three drivers to do it. This is the first time since then. Led from the front. Both Russell and Verstappen looked really good in the interperiod. Then once it started to dry, whether it was because Norris knew, and obviously would have been told by his team, that it's going to dry up, protect the tyres. And I feel like this is a thing that Norris does quite well, and it's looking after those tyres. And that's the difference, I suppose, between Norris and Piastri so far this season, is that Norris is just so good at looking after those tyres and then can attack at the end. We saw it in Imola. Mm-hmm. We've seen it again here in Canada. You know, got into the lead of the race through it. Is this what Norris is going to sort of be needing to sort of fight for a championship over the course of the season, is races where it comes down to maybe more management of tyres rather than just push the tyres box?
I think so, but I think it's really now showcasing Norris as the driver that we all knew what he was. You know, he's got loads of fans. People back Norris all the way, but I don't think he's been given those opportunities. Now that the Red Bulls are obviously not as strong as what they once were, it is showcasing Norris as this super talent that maybe could win some world champions or whatever, help with the Constructors' Championship, whatever it is. So I see what you're saying. I think potentially is he better suited for this style of, you know, just more tyre management. But at the same time, I think he's an aggressive driver, and we've seen that, and we know he's amazing in wet conditions, and that takes a lot of driver craft. So I think right now that's what we're seeing, and I agree with your points there, but I don't think so. I think as a whole, you know, he's an overall driver that you'd want in your team. He's strong, he's going to push, he can manage the tyres, he can keep things quite consistent. We're just now seeing him, because he's at the front, he's becoming more competitive. So I think we're going to see 10 times more from Norris if this trajectory keeps going like this, if Max might not be P1, you know, if Max is P2 or maybe even less than that, then I think it's the real chance for Norris to come through now. But I never backed Norris. I really didn't. I knew he was a great driver, but I never was like a massive fan of him, because I just didn't really see him fighting. The car wasn't there at McLaren, and now it's, you know, coming up, and they may be, you know, the second fastest or the third fastest team on the grid, one of the top teams. So it's given a great chance for Piastri and Norris, but Norris definitely has the upper hand over Piastri, I think, because like you say, you know, his tyre management isn't the best, but I just think that's experience. You know, he needs more experience in Formula One. And then maybe they'll be the strongest team. And I would love to see that. I'm just happy not to see it always be, you know, Max being super consistent. He did win, of course. I predicted he was going to win, Hayden. So I'll take that for the team. But I didn't want him to win.
You and your boring predictions.
No.
Speak for the fans. And I want excitement. And I want a championship battle. And allow me to have that.
You do. There was a few comments. I do look at your comments, guys. And there was a few comments saying that, although I got the podium correct, they actually wanted your predictions to be correct, Hayden. Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. I've just said two more. I'm more like realistic, which is a little bit irritating because I just, everyone was in the comments was also saying, I don't think it's going to be a Verstappen win. Red Bulls have not been consistent this weekend. But something in me, it's never about the consistency. It's about what is going to happen in that race, what safety cars, how many safety cars are there going to be, you know, who's going to get that tyre strategy correct. That's what I'm thinking about. And I go back in all the other races where McLaren might have made the wrong call or Ferrari strategy isn't the best as we've seen across the previous years. That's why I put Max as the P1 because I was like, I think Red Bull, cool, calm and collected. He's a great driver, very consistent. He will take that win because something's going to go wrong for Norris and Russell like it did.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Well, they did get very lucky, and you spoke about safety cars and the safety car brought out by Logan Sargeant's crash. Now, it took a long time for that safety car to come out.
Like,
it took a while.
Yeah.
The rear wing was clearly broken. Sargeant's car was not moving. I don't get the reason to delay the safety car for so long because there's a car stranded just off of the racing line. Okay, it's off the racing line. Doesn't need to be like straight away red flag or safety car. I understand that there is that allowing for the decision making to be made. But we're talking, it was like half a lap. It took a while for that safety car to come out. And ultimately, it's what cost Lando Norris the race win because he got caught up, literally picked up by the safety car. I think it was as he went through the final corner, because he had the lead over Verstappen and Russell. He went through that final corner, safety car was deployed, and because the way the pit lane is and it's so unique, you miss out turn one. So the safety car could launch straight out to turn two, picks up Norris, whilst Verstappen and Russell could all box behind. And then from there, Norris had to box and wasn't able to get it, unfortunately. However, I will say this is karma sort of sorting itself out. Because Norris got very lucky in Miami with the safety car because the safety car picked up the wrong driver. Mm-hmm. And that didn't gift Norris the race win because he still had to work through it and he still had to drive away. But it put him in the best position to win the race. And it was the same thing for Verstappen here. It didn't gift Verstappen the race win. Verstappen still had to work for it. He still had to bring that car home.
Yeah.
But it puts him in the best position. And I think they said it very well on the radio. It was just like, there we go. That's for Miami. So, whilst the safety car decision was very much wrong, I think now for Lando fans and Max fans, it's a clean slate now. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything happens in the future, then it's like, okay, what is going on here, guys? We need to sort this out. But at least now it's all sorted itself out.
Exactly. But I think this is what we need as well, you know, to brighten up these races and make them more interesting is a little bit of safety car drama. That's exactly what we wanted. But there was so much drama. I think it was sort of like the last sector of the race. We're coming towards the end now. And I was there like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? You know, is it going to be Max? Is it going to be Norris? Is it going to be Russell? Oh gosh, Russell's gone. Oh my gosh, Hamilton's going to be on the podium. Oh no, Hamilton's not on the podium because now Russell's got passed. There was so much drama. towards the end, I loved it. I just thought it was great. It was such a great race, but very unfortunate for Russell. And it just opens this question of, does he crack under the pressure? Is that the problem that we see with George Russell? You know, the commentators talk about this as well. When he's given the spotlight, is that where we see him go wrong? And I think we've seen this with Charles as well sometimes, because they're such perfectionists. And I was saying this to you, Hayden, before the podcast, we had a little chat before we press record. And I was saying this to you, I was like, I think that, and I see this in myself as well, I'm such a perfectionist that sometimes you can crack under that pressure because you hold yourself to such a high standard that if you don't perform like that, or in your, if you're in that situation, you're thinking, I need to be the best, I need to be the best, oh my gosh, I'm in this position. Because there's so much on you, your brain just can't take it. And then that's when it's open for, there's room for mistakes then. And I think that's what we see with Russell. And even Toto came on and was like, George, focus, yeah. George. He can even see, you know, there's too much going on in his brain. So is Russell going to be the number one driver when Hamilton goes? You know, are they going to maybe look for some other drivers if they don't think George is up to scratch?
I mean, I think they will. I think it's going to be Kimi Antonelli that comes in. It's very much clear that the door is closed on Sainz, and the door is more open for Kimi Antonelli. I think he came out and said that, you know, our focus on the future and Kimi is our future. With George Russell, yes, he makes a lot of mistakes. I've spoken about this before on the podcast, that I just think this is okay. This is fine. Like, he's had, what is this, his third year now in Mercedes? So his third year in a top team. And what's like, that's third year. Come on, you should be winning. You should be at the top. You should be perfect. No. Okay, Charles Leclerc is still making small little errors, and that's fine. These drivers are young. They're coming into the sport a lot younger than when I first got into Formula One. And Hamilton, you know, when he got in, he was the youngest driver when he came in. And so was Sebastian Vettel, but they were still older than what the younger drivers are now. So we're getting drivers in a lot earlier, and they're going through this phase of making mistakes. And if you're not making mistakes, you're not learning. Okay, if a driver is too scared to make a mistake, one, they're not pushing enough, and you know they're always going to be on the back foot. But also, they're never going to make the mistakes, and they're never going to learn. Max Verstappen made a horrendous amount of mistakes in his earlier stage of a career, 2015, 16, 17, 18. But then from 2019 onwards, started to become a more developed driver, a more complete driver. Now we get, you know, Mr. Consistency very rarely makes a mistake out on track. So for George Russell right now to be making the mistakes when you're allowed to do so, you're not fighting for a championship. Yes, okay, you know, he could have won today's race, or he could have won the Canadian Grand Prix for sure, but he didn't because he made mistakes. But he's going to learn from that, and he's going to be a better driver because of it. So I think it's a good position to be in when you're at the front fighting for those wins, but you're not quite winning or fighting for a championship. That gives you that little bit of freedom to be like, okay, pick myself back up. What went wrong? What do I not do next time? And that's kind of what Russell's going through at the moment. That's what Norris will be allowed to go through, but I think Norris has shown more consistency and less mistakes. And Leclerc has gone through in the past as well. And of course, Max Verstappen has definitely gone through.
Would you say, because obviously you've been in the sport for longer than I have, because a lot of the drivers are quite similar to when I first came into the sport. We've got obviously a few drivers come in and out, but it's quite similar. Would you say that when rookies first entered the sport, they're more scrutinized now in modern Formula One as opposed to back in, you know, 2010, sort of that period?
Back in my day.
Back in your day, I was only so 9 years old.
Were they more scrutinized? I think yes, because you have, they're more scrutinized now because you have social media. Social media is the big difference that everybody has an opinion now. Whereas before, it's just the press. And you would base your opinion off what either the commentators were saying or alluding to, or what you would read either in articles online or in papers or whatever. That was your only source of information. Now, everybody has an opinion. Yeah. So you can literally go onto Twitter or X and go, okay, you're just flooded with negative stuff against Hamilton. Okay, I don't like Hamilton now because that's all I've seen. Or you're flooded with negative stuff about Verstappen. I don't like Verstappen now because of this is what I'm seeing. So I think rookies, when they come in, for sure, they're jumped upon straight away. And there's a lot more of this like, aha, let's poke fun. Let's take the piss out of this person. Whereas before, you wouldn't necessarily have that. But back then, you know, all drivers would go through that. I'm thinking of Hamilton's career, for example. Had a really good start to his career, of course, you know, fought for the championship, won the championship in the second season. 2011 was his bogey season. 2011 could not stop crashing into Felipe Massa. But because of that season, he became a better driver for it. And I think these drivers should be allowed to go through this. And I think people need to be a little bit more lenient. And I know this is never going to go through to a lot of people on social media, but there are human beings on the other side, mm-hmm. you know, that are allowed to make a mistake. If you're poking fun and you're taking the piss out of people on social media for making mistakes, look at yourself and look at the mistakes that you've made in life, because I can guarantee you have, because we all have. So it's not a massive deal if it happens over and over again when you've, yeah. you know, for example, Sergio Perez, I don't think there should be any hate gone towards him, but the questions do need to be asked mm-hmm. about his place in Red Bull, because it's consistent mistakes and he is an elder driver. He should have the experience to be consistent. I'm not expecting Perez to beat Verstappen. Verstappen is an incredible driver, but needs to be picking up those P6s in order to counteract if a Ferrari get a second and a third.
Yeah, which I think is fair enough, though, because when you're in a top team, you know, you probably are going to be scrutinised more than the rest of the drivers. But this brings me on to harsh comments. So do you think, obviously over the weekend, Jacques Villeneuve came out and had a few harsh comments on Daniel Ricciardo. But I think everyone, there's two sides to this, mm-hmm. because some people praised him. They were like, yes, this is exactly what needs to be said. Ricciardo needs to be scrutinised. What is going on? We need more pundits like this that are a bit more open, a bit more opinionated. Then you've got the other side saying, a little bit too harsh, you know, I don't think we should really have this on Sky Sports, for example, maybe somewhere else. But I'd love to know where you lie on this. Do you think we need to have more opinionated pundits, or do you think it needs to be slightly more biased?
I think opinions are allowed. I don't like the unbiased approach, because I feel like then everyone's sitting on the fence and you don't necessarily have conversations. I do think a line needs to be drawn, but I do get what Villeneuve is saying, and I think he was along the right lines. You know, Ricciardo has been in the sport for a long time. I think to completely wipe away his career was too far. To say, oh, he only beat Vettel because Vettel was burnt out, and then he only did this, because Verstappen was young. No, in that stage of his career, he was having a fantastic career, for sure. Mm. It's from post-Renault onwards, I'd say, the struggles have happened, because the Renault start was difficult, but you're in a new car, you're finding your feet. Once he found his feet, really performed well in that Renault in the second season. Once he jumped to McLaren, that was the big issue. That's when it all started to fall apart and it wasn't working. And you know, he's right. It's the same excuse. We've got to build the car around him. We need to suit him and all this sort of stuff. Whereas I think if it was the other way around, and I saw this in one of the hot takes comments when we were looking through for hot takes, which will come later. But if it was the other way around and Yuki Tsunoda was doing what... if Daniel Ricciardo was doing what Yuki Tsunoda is doing to him right now, everyone was saying Daniel Ricciardo needs that seat and would probably be looking at a Red Bull seat halfway through the season. Perez would not have a new contract and Daniel would very likely be jumping into Red Bull halfway through the season.
Yeah.
And I just think it's because of this group of people that surround him. He's got a great structure around him. He's got an amazing fan base. And that is brilliant, because when you have people who have these opinions, you need those people to pick you back up and say, do you know what? Yeah, okay. It's not a great moment at the moment, but we know those performances are there and we know you can get back to your best. And there's this, you know, support around him. And, you know, maybe Villeneuve is right in a sense that his spot in F1 currently is there because of what he brings to the sport and his personality, because I think in other drivers in that position might not have got that second chance after the season that he had with McLaren.
Yeah.
But, you know, those questions are right to be asked, I think, but a line needs to be drawn. You can't just, you know, on someone's career. No, yeah. But you can definitely be like, look, he's now at this stage of his career, he's being beaten by a younger driver of Yuki Tsunoda. Do things need to be changed? And he responded very well. Mm-hmm. A great performance this weekend. P5 in qualifying. Kind of got screwed over with the strategy because Yuki stayed out long and then boxed straight to dry. So jumped him, but then got back into the points. So a good weekend for Ricciardo. But this is what we need more often. It's not a case of go like, haha, you said this and look, you're wrong now because he's winning. No, that's one flash in the pan at the moment. Mm-hmm. We need more results like this. He needs to be beating Yuki consistently. And that's what I think we should all be expecting to see.
Yeah, because he came out afterwards and did say, you know, it was a great weekend for me. I know I've not been consistent. You know, I don't think he's found that sweet spot with the car also. But then again, you can't blame the car. I mean, every great racing driver, you know, you will put excuses left, right and centre, not put it on yourself. But I think he does take slight ownership to he's not where he was and he's just struggling to find that again. So hopefully we see him there. But yeah, the comments on Sky Sports, like my take from it is, it's quite nice to see a bit of a debate because, like you say, you don't want it to just be like all simple and everyone says the same thing. It is nice to get, you know, opinions out there. Is it super harsh? Is it awkward? They're seeing each other around the paddock and things like that. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because obviously it's going to create these awkward environments and tension. But then again, that's the sport. Unfortunately, you know, you're going to have this. You're scrutinized from everyone, from the commentators to the fans to your team to whatever it is. So he's under a lot of pressure and hopefully I'd love to see him, you know, back in those points again. And he was doing great this weekend. So I'd love to see him just carry this for the rest of the season. But it's super difficult for Daniel Ricciardo. I think you're right that if it was any other driver, they would be out of there by now. But that's what makes the sport so much bigger. You know, it's not just about the driving. It is like we go back to Perez. It's about sponsors. It's what do they bring? You know, is it fans, fan engagement, whatever? It's all about, you know, how marketable is your driver as well, not just how well can they drive. And I think that's what we're seeing this season. You know, there's some drivers that you'd say, why are they still here? What are they doing? You know, going to Lance Stroll as well. People are, why is he here? Of course, his dad owns a team, so he's got the upper hand there. But going to your man, Lance Stroll, you know, he had a great weekend, but no one's talking about it. You know, a few comments here and there, but no one's praising him. Then you wait until he has a bad weekend and then it's like, oh, Lance Stroll.
Yeah, he's very opposite to Ricciardo. I suppose he has no fan base. It's just me.
Yes.
It's just, I'm the only one there.
You're the number one fan.
Yeah, there's a very little fan base for Stroll, sadly, but a lot of people like to jump on the bandwagon the other way. And if it's a bad weekend, it's Pope fun, it's point. It's like, you're rubbish. You should be out of the sport. You do well, with black. Just going to ignore that. Yeah. But Ricciardo fans, the other way around, it's Ricciardo does well. It's, you know, yes, we're going to shout about it. It's a bad weekend. We're just going to crawl and hide a little bit and wait for this to blow over. And that's just the way the sport is. And it's all about your drivers. And, you know, I'm not surprised that Daniel Ricciardo has a great fan base because he is an incredible person and he's a really fun driver, whereas Lance Stroll likes to keep himself to himself. And, you know, his inconsistencies are massively apparent. But yeah, good weekend for Stroll. Good weekend for Aston Martin as well, because they have struggled in recent races. They've been sort of, you know, on the back end of nearly outside the points. And also a good race weekend for Alonso, because Imola and Monaco were really not great weekends. And also he was outqualified in Miami as well by Stroll. So good for Alonso to get back in. And it was really nice to see him and Hamilton having a battle in the earlier stages of the race.
Oh, I loved it. Also great for my fantasy team. I was really worried. I've got Alonso in there. If you don't know, we on Grid Rival, me and Hayden are in the Golden Helmet League, which we are the faces of. And there's some other influencers and celebrities in there. But yeah, I've got Alonso on my team and I was really worried. He's not had, you know, a great past few races, but he did great. It's really nice to see the Aston Martins back up there. And I don't know, you know, the car must have been looking strong, but I think Stroll also had that. It's my home race, you know, let me push a little bit more, which is nice to have a bit of pressure on Stroll for once. You know, does he really have any pressure? We speak about this all the time. Your dad owns the team. You're going to stay in that team regardless. So it's nice to be like, oh, actually, let's try and impress at the home race, which I think we saw this weekend.
Yeah, good performance from him. And I think, yeah, a really good home race and a good Canadian Grand Prix. Right, let's wrap it up and talk about our ratings for the race. Out of 10, what are you going to give it?
Oh, right. I'm going to be honest now. I think this is quite controversial, my opinion, which always is, Hayden.
We're
going to
switch from
know.
Australia when you thought Australia was amazing and I thought it was dull. And now it's the other way around.
So this race, okay, it started off like, whoa, amazing. What is going on with the tyre strategy? And there was a few little bits and bobs, but there was one point in the middle where I was like, because I thought it was just going to stay like this now. You know, everyone sort of found the tyres that they want to stay on. Some people will just go the rest. Maybe there'll be, you know, a change somewhere. I wasn't expecting any more safety cars to come out yet because it was quite consistent for like 10 laps or something like that. So I did get slightly bored for like 10 minutes of it. But then the drama kicks in again. So because of that, I'm not going to rate it as high as you probably think I'm going to rate it. But I'm going to put it at... it's going to be an 8 for me. An 8 out of 10.
You give descriptions that I just don't understand when you give your ratings. And maybe we rate things differently, because I would also agree it was an 8. Like, if, because I base it, you know, off of all-time races. So I'd say, as an all-time, this is an 8 out of 10. It was a very, very strong race. Very, very entertaining. 10 out of 10 for the season. Best race of the season so far. Hands down for me. But in terms of, overall rating, what would I give it? 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Definitely. Really, really enjoyable throughout, I think.
The same, maybe, but just different reasoning.
Maybe this or that. But, you know, what does it need to get a 10 out of 10? Fight for the win on the last lap. You know, 2011 Canada style. Jensen Button wins the race. Obviously, that's going to massively help in my decision to make it a 10 out of 10, because I'm a big fanboy. Right, well, there we go. That is it. That is our wrap-up for the Canadian Grand Prix. Let's get into our hot takes of the week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2. Your second line simplified.
Right, Amber, it is time to get into our hot takes of the week. The part of the show where you lot at home send us your spiciest takes from the Canadian Grand Prix. We debate them, we react to them, and we try and rate how spicy they are out of 5. Amber, are you ready for some spicy takes?
I'm ready, and I'm expecting some spicy ones because it was a great race. So let's get into it.
It was a great race, and our first spicy take is going to come in from Runak Roy, and they say that Alpine will do anything to make Gasly look better than Ocon. Yesterday was an example.
Oh, I mean, I think we're seeing that even without yesterday's example. I think we're seeing that anyway, because when they came out and made that bold statement of there will be serious consequences, we know the team do not... Oh, they're not happy and they do not want to work with Ocon anymore. Yeah. So that's what happens if you've really angered your team to come out and make a bold statement like that. Yes, the rest of the season is going to play out where you are not the favoured driver anymore, and they will do anything to make sure that other driver is doing better than you. So 100%, even without the Canadian Grand Prix, I'm like, this hot take is correct.
Yeah, there were team orders in the race because Ocon got himself into the points and was ahead of Gasly, but then was told to let him back through. And I think they said if Ocon was like, if I can't overtake or something like that, will I get the position back? And they were like, no. So there was like no real reason for it. They just wanted Gasly in front because obviously Gasly is their driver that potentially is going to be re-signed. He hasn't been re-signed yet, but we already know that Ocon is definitely not going to be with the team for next season. So between those two... Obviously, they're going to back Gasly for the time being. And I think the radio message after was something along the lines like from Ocon being like, I am too nice. I do everything that you ask me. I'm too nice to you lot. So things definitely aren't happy down at the Alpine camp. But yeah, I think for the rest of the season, and I think that is expected. And I think it's something that you usually see in Formula One. If a driver is leaving, then it's like, we don't care about you anymore. We'll still want you to score points, but we're going to give driver A, you know, all of the best strategies and all of the best modes and all of the best upgrades. Look at Mercedes, for example, and the same thing kind of happened there. You know, Hamilton was in a better position. Go back a year ago and they would have been like, no, George, do not fight Hamilton. We hold position. Hamilton goes and attacks Norris. That was what they would have done. But now Hamilton's out. So it's like, no, George, you get priority. Go for it. Just don't crash, but just go for it. We see it at Alpine. We saw it in the past with Sebastian Vettel massively off the pace of Leclerc. I think it was in 2020 in the season that he was getting kicked out because they're giving all the preference to Leclerc. So it's just the way that Formula One is. And I think, yeah, for the rest of the season, Ocon will still be able to have those results where he's ahead of Gasly, but he needs to make sure that Gasly isn't the car directly behind him. Otherwise, it's going to be like, through you go, mate. You're getting that position.
Exactly. We don't want another repeat of the Monaco Grand Prix. But it's difficult. I think it's unfair on Ocon. But at the same time, that's just the nature of the sport. You know, if you do something and the team's not happy with you, you're going to have to just accept it's probably going to be difficult for the rest of the time that you're there. So hopefully Ocon can use this time to showcase. But then if Gasly's going to get all the upgrades and potentially have the better car, there's little that he can do anyway. So it is really unfortunate for him. But we've seen Ocon get caught in these battles before. And is that what you'd want as a team? Do you want a driver like that? We've seen some great moments from him throughout his career, but it's all about this consistency again. You know, if these drivers can't maintain that consistency, it's going to be a massive issue for the team. So now it's really time for Ocon to prove himself. But in terms of being nice, he has to be nice. You know, yeah, he might be getting frustrated now because he just does whatever the team says, but the team aren't happy with you. You're going to have to listen to their orders for the rest of the time that you're there now. So if he starts going a different way and is a bit more, I don't know, aggressive or doing whatever he wants, then he's not going to look good for any future teams. So
yeah,
he is in that difficult situation, but he just has to swallow the pill and just, you know, just get on with it.
Very much so. I fully agree with that. You know, I hope that that deal with Haas that's so called is going on is close to being signed because, yeah, it's going to look bad for him soon because Gasly's going to constantly beat him and he's going to get frustrated with team orders, which, you know, Haas like a feisty driver. So maybe they'll be like, okay, that's fine. We don't worry about it too much.
I thought that. I was like, you know, if he's going to Haas, great. Do whatever you want. Be feisty because Haas will sign you straight away. But I thought he was a goner. If he gets that deal with Haas, I will be quite surprised because I thought he was just going to, you know, leave the sport. Why would Haas want him? Is it just because they want an aggressive driver? Is that it, really? Yeah. If I was Haas, I'd be looking at someone similar to, you know, Hulk again, someone like that. You know, if Magnussen stays in the team, then I'd want someone similar that's just a little bit more consistent.
So what are we rating that hot take out of 5?
I'm gonna give it's not like really spicy, but I do like this hot take, so I'm gonna go straight in at a 4.
Yeah, I think 3 for me. It's medium, which for me is quite spicy when I go now.
Exactly.
But it's a medium. Yeah, I think I just fully agree with it. And it's just to kind of be expected when a driver's on his way out, that the other driver is always going to get preference for the rest of his career. Another driver who got preference, and this is on to our next hot take. This one comes from at Franklin is bored. So they were clearly writing up that name in that 10-minute board period that you had during the race, Amber. Don't know where it came from. But they have put that Lewis should have finished P3 ahead of George. And also, Ferrari has terrible strategy. Now, the second part of that, not really hot take. We all know that. You've been on dry
it's just
training.
The truth.
What are you doing? But the first part of that is a very similar point. But yeah, Lewis, a lot of pace in practice, but then it just kind of disappears in the races. Now, is that George getting the best out of qualifying and just excelling in qualifying to get that gap? Or is it a case of Mercedes, you know, you're putting on that conspiracy theory hat, got the tinfoil one.
Mm-hmm.
Are they just turning down the engine modes for Lewis Hamilton's cars just slightly so that George Russell always has the benefit and their number one driver is always in front?
It would make more sense because why would you want the driver that's just gone, see you later, I'm going to a different team? Why would you want them doing well? So I don't know. Is that at play? It would make sense if it is at play, but I really, really wanted Hamilton to get on the podium. I'm a Hamilton fan, so, you know, completely biased there. But I really wanted him to. But I do think Russell had, you know, he put in more of the hard work in that race. And yes, Hamilton was making moves and overtakes and he was doing great. And he had a nice battle with Alonso throughout. But I think George, you could say he had a harder time. And I think some people probably disagree with what I'm saying. Because, you know, Hamilton did, you know, have a bit of a hard time in that race. And like I say, he was, you know, very active. But I think you could see George was struggling a lot. So maybe mentally he was having a harder time than Hamilton. So I kind of do think Russell deserved, you know, P3 more. But I would love to see Hamilton on there. I was quite gutted.
Yeah, I think it also comes down to the pit stops from the wets or the inters to the dries. Hamilton boxed. And he was right behind Piastri when he boxed. And then when he comes out and Piastri's done his pit stop one lap later, he's 11 seconds back from Oscar Piastri. That's a lot of time lost and a big misjudgment of the track conditions and the time to box. Now, I haven't listened to all of the driver team radios, and I know some people love to listen to those. So if I've got this wrong, do let us know. But if it was down to Lewis Hamilton's decision, fair enough, he's made the wrong call. But if it's down to the team saying, box now, we have the data, basically, because there were other drivers on dries, they would have seen those drivers and been able to judge their lap times and seen, okay, cool, is it time to go for dries? If they have looked at that and gone, box, then they've made that error. And they've used, basically, Lewis Hamilton as their guinea pig to be like, okay, you go on the dries and we're going to get that data and we're going to see when is the right time to come into the box. I don't think they even made the right time for Russell because he came out behind Norris. Norris, in all fairness, probably made the best time to come into the box because it put him, it allowed him to jump Russell and put him just behind Verstappen. Yes, okay, he was in front at the safety car line, but it's completely wet on the outside, so it was very difficult to hold that lead. But yeah, Lewis was basically the guinea pig for Russell, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, but I thought this at first when I saw them obviously call him in. I thought, no, oh my gosh, what are they doing? It's the tyre craziness again. But then at the same time, you know, why would you want to use one of your drivers as a guinea pig and potentially ruin his race? Because yes, okay, you want your other driver to be better in those points and positions, but would you really try to hinder your second driver's race? That's the difficulty.
I think because they're never going to win the Constructors' Championship because they're too far back now. And they had such a lead over Alonso that they basically had a free pit stop and a free gap to go into that they weren't going to lose enough time that Alonso would jump them and they'd lose fifth place. Mm-hmm. So it was okay to use him as a guinea pig and to try and help Russell get the race win. Because at this stage for them in their season and to make them look the best they possibly can be, it's not a case of, oh yeah, let's finish third in the Constructors' Championship and try and beat either Ferrari or McLaren. No.
Yeah.
Instead, it's, we got a race win this season. We won in Canada. We got this podium here and there. Like, that's going to be their highlights of the season. So yeah, that's probably why they would have gone, right, Hamilton, you're testing now. Russell, let's try getting the race win.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair enough. You know, you can, if you've got room to do it, you can do it. But I was there thinking, this is not going to end well because, you know, the track wasn't completely dry as well. There was still a few spots on there. And we did see Hamilton struggle towards the end. And that's ultimately why he didn't secure P3. But if that's what they're pushing, they want Russell to be their number one man, even though he's making a few little mistakes here and there, unfortunately, then that's the route they're on. They just have to take that.
Yeah. Okay. What are we rating this hot take? Very similar to the first one.
Well, actually, we didn't really touch on the Ferrari strategy, but I agree.
Yeah,
Ferrari strategy,
I mean, that's just an obvious.
Rubbish.
If it drives on, it's raining. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Exactly. But I'm going to rate this hot take a 3 for me because I really wanted Hamilton, you know, to get that win. But I think, you know, Russell deserved it. I mean, not to get the win, to get P3, but I think Russell deserved it in the end. So a 3 for me, this hot take.
Do I think the situation is more spicy than the Alpine one? I think slightly. So I'm going to go 4. I think it's just slightly more spicy than the Alpine one because they're fighting for podiums. That's when team orders are less apparent, you know, which is fair enough. They didn't really give team orders. They just said fight. But I think in a year ago, they would have said hold position. I genuinely think they would have told Russell to hold. Hamilton is going to try and attack Norris. So yeah, I'm going to go for a 4 on that one. Right, our final hot take from the day. This comes from at Cameron X, and they say, if Piastri improves his tyre management, he will beat Norris regularly. I like this one.
Ooh, this is a spicy hot take because this is what we speak about a lot, and we spoke about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
That at the start of the podcast, that Russell, you did say, you know, is Russell just super consistent with his tyres? Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, he's getting in these positions and things. And that's why Piastri sometimes is a little bit lower because he's not as consistent. I agree, to be honest. I think if Piastri can work on his tyre management, what is there to say that he couldn't be beating Russell or he is up there with Russell? I think they're quite close anyway, you know, in pace. If I was a team principal, I would love to have these two drivers on there because Piastri's less experienced. you know, ultimately, he's not going to be exactly where Norris is, but he is quite similar. So there's great potential there. So I agree with this hot take. If that's one thing that Piastri needs to improve on, he could really be up there and be a lot more competitive. But he's already competitive now, so it's great.
Yeah, I think there's a high chance. And if they can sort out this time management, which, you know, Lando's went through in his earlier stages of his career and has been able to get back at that, and he's incredible at time management now. If they get this, McLaren have got two incredible drivers on their hand. Yeah. They've already got them, but there'd be two drivers that can manage tyres, push all the way throughout the race, and both be competitive fighting for the race wins. At the moment, Norris is your number one, just because Piastri, whilst he has the pace, can keep on it, just loses in those latter stages of the stints. And we've seen that. We saw that in the intermediate phase. We saw that again in the dry phase. It just falls away from that McLaren driver. And, you know, he's in his second season. We can allow it. It's fine. But it is something that he does need to work on. And I'm sure he is trying to work on behind the scenes at the moment to become a more complete driver. But yeah, I mean, he's able to match Norris in terms of pace, I think, from the majority of races. Qualifying is always very close. And I think, yeah, it's going to become a very tricky situation for McLaren. If they are a team that fights for wins and championships, they're going to have a tricky situation on their hands if Piastri's able to sort out his tyres. But it's a good conundrum that McLaren are going to want to have. And it sets us up very nicely for maybe a possible future battle later on. But I genuinely, I don't want to say I fully agree with it, because Norris is still a great driver. I don't think it's a case of, like, you know, Norris is just good at time management and that's it. No. I think Norris is a very good driver and Piastri can certainly be on par with him, and it'll be a really good battle between the two of them. But yeah, do I fully agree with it? No, but is it a great point? Yes.
I think so. I just think it's a great problem to have though, McLaren. Like, we've got an amazing driver. You've just got this little habit that we just need to iron out slightly. It's amazing. It's not like, oh, come on, Oscar, you know, what are you doing? It's not the Perez problems. It's not the Ricciardo problems. Mm-hmm. It's we've got an amazing driver. All it is just lack of experience and just working on his driver craft. So I think it's an amazing position for McLaren to be in. And McLaren, for me, are sort of like an all-rounder team on and off the track, because they're quite trendy. You know, they've got loads of, like, a huge fan base backing them. And they've got two younger drivers and two amazing talent of drivers. So if they can keep these two for a few years and keep the car consistent, hopefully the 2026 regulations do not change that car and they really struggle, then I think they're onto something. They could be back up there again. And, you know, they could be the next Red Bull. Red Bull drop off. Ferrari aren't doing that great. Mercedes are catching up, but not really. I'd love to see McLaren in that position. And I didn't think I'd be saying this at the start of the season. I was like, no. McLaren, come on. They're not going to do it. Maybe another 2 years, whatever. Let's see the next regulation changes. Mm-hmm. They're doing it and they're impressing me massively.
Yeah, they're really strong. They're at the front. And, you know, it just points towards Perez more so, I guess, in the sense that, you know, you have two top drivers at McLaren. You have two top drivers at Ferrari when, you know, one of them's not putting drives on, the other one's not taking out a future teammate. And obviously Lewis Hamilton's going there. So they should, in theory, have a very strong lineup there. Having two top drivers who can equal each other could be the way to go to win the Constructors' Championship in the future. And it is something that Red Bull might have to look at in seasons to come. It might be their undoing. But something that I look forward to seeing, you know, Norris, Piastri up there fighting with Verstappen, Leclerc, Hamilton. Fingers crossed we can have an incredible 2025 that is exactly like
that. It'd be
that.
Amazing. That is my final dream, Hayden.
That is the dream. That is the dream.
That is
final
the dream.
Hot take then. What are you ranking that one out of five?
I like this hot take again. I told you these hot takes are going to be quite spicy. I love these ones. So I'm gonna go with a four again, because it's not spicy enough for a five, but it's got, you know, it's got the things in my brain ticking. So, and I agree with it, I think. So I'm going to go for a four.
I think this would spark a debate that would last all day if you find the right sort of people. And I think for me, this is a five. It's a spicy take. I love it. Do I fully agree with it? Yes and no. It's one of those that kind of put me a little bit on the fence, that I agree with a lot of parts, and a lot of parts I'm like, oh, would it, won't it? So that's why I think, because it's got my own head in a conundrum right now, that I'm like, this is a spicy take, this is good,
you know.
I like it.
You know what it is? It's because, and it's what I used to do a lot, is because I'm like, oh, it's not happened yet, so, you know, I don't know, I need to see more, I need more data. That's where you are right now, and that's why you're a little bit confused.
I've become you. I am now on the
fence. We've swapped. Yeah. We have swapped.
But I've gone with a rating straight away, and I've gone with five, and that is what I'm going to rate it. And that is going to wrap up this week's Hot Takes of the Week. Thank you, everyone at home, for sending in your hot takes. We look forward to reviewing yours on the next podcast. Make sure you get them in over on our social medias. Follow us on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to, and go check out all of our socials as well. And we will see you next week for another podcast. Until then, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.